Iku Iluna, please rise. Ia ka aha ho o kolo kolo ki ki hano hano ua a koa koa ho maila. This Honorable Supreme Court is now reconvened. E noho I lalo. Please be seated.
All right, please call the case.
Case number SCWC22464. State of Hawaii, petitioner, plaintiff appellee versus Eric Willis, respondent, defendant appellant. Arguing for petitioner, State of Hawaii, Brian Vincent and Lawrence Susi. Arguing for respondent, Eric Willis, Eric Seitz. Also appearing, Jonathan Liu. Argument on the merits.
All right, good afternoon, aloha everyone. Our proceeding today is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel as well as on Alelo. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
All right, we've allocated 30 minutes for each side. For the state, Mr. Vincent, you're going to argue for 20 minutes, and then Mr. Susi will take over for 5 minutes. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we will give you warning lights at the end of the 20 and 25 minutes, and then you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And I understand you're going to be presenting the rebuttal, Mr. Vincent, correct? All right, and then Mr. Seitz, you'll have 30 minutes. We'll give you a warning with 10 minutes to go. All right, very well. Mr. Vincent, please proceed.
Good morning. During his closing argument, the deputy prosecutor, Lawrence Susi, commented that we know from Edward Leo that he washed his hands and his face because he had blood on them. The question before this court is whether that comment could reasonably have been interpreted by the jurists as an assertion that Edward Leo had testified that Willis had blood on his hands and face. Let me give you 7 reasons. I'll just work my way through the closing arguments and give you 7 reasons why I believe that last phrase in that sentence should be interpreted as argument and not as misrepresentation of Edward Leal's evidence. First, the trial judge instructed the jury twice that what the attorneys say is not evidence. And you're not bound by the attorney's recollections or interpretations of the evidence. They were instructed once in the general instructions, which went back into the jury room with him, and they were instructed once before Mr. Susi made his began his closing argument. Mr. Susi, early in his closing argument, drew the jury's attention to the circumstantial evidence jury instruction. It was on page 18 of the written instructions, page 21 of docket 40, which is the closing argument, or just before the closing argument during the general instructions. By doing so, Mr. Susi made clear to the jury that he was going to rely on circumstantial evidence, which permits a reasonable inference of the existence of another fact. And of course, we well know why that is, because this is not the first time this case has appeared before this court. We did have direct evidence that we could have presented as to the identity of MK's attacker. Okay, that was suppressed, and we now are forced to rely on reasonable inferences from direct evidence. And Mr. Susi brought that to the jury's attention early on. Third, immediately before the comment, when Mr. Susi referred to the discoloration of the white T-shirt in the videos and Taylor Gray's testimony, he candidly admitted that there was no direct evidence of blood on the shirt or on the man in the state's exhibit number 4. Okay, He suggested that there was 2 possible reasonable inferences, blood or sand. That candid admission is inconsistent with the ICA's interpretation of Mr. Susi's comment as being an assertion that Leal had seen blood on his hands. If Leal had testified the man in State's Exhibit 4 had blood in his hands, he wouldn't have had to rely on a guess as to whether it was sand or blood. You would have had direct evidence. Fourth, the comment itself is separated by a significant pause into two phrases. The first phrase is an undisputed fact, which is was testified to by Edward Leal, and was also that evidence was recorded on State's Exhibit Number 4. You can review this video surveillance tape, and you can see the person washing his hands in the white sink. So the second part is an argument based on a reasonable inference. A reasonable inference that because the proximity and time and place to the stabbing, it was reasonable to believe that the person in State's Exhibit 4 was washing blood off his hands. Fifth, the State's Exhibit 4 speaks for itself. It shows somebody washing his hands. And you cannot see blood from the video. We think it's highly unlikely that the jury would have looked at that video and thought that the deputy prosecutor's comment was a misrepresentation of Leal's testimony. Okay, Edward Leal was not much further away from the camera. Or Mr. Leal was not much further away from Willis than the camera was, and you can't see the blood on either one. So it's inconsistent. We believe it's inconsistent with an understanding of the second part of that phrase as being a misrepresentation of Leal's testimony. Sixth, Willis's defense team responded to the state's
counsel. Argument. Isn't the real problem it's the context where it's stated? We know from Edward Leal that he washed his hands and washed the blood. We know from Edward Leal. Isn't that the misrepresentation? Isn't that what the real issue is?
Well, we know from Edward Leal that the man in Exhibit Number 4 washed his hands and face.
But we also know from Mr. Leal that he didn't testify about seeing any blood on his shirt, arms, hands.
And that's correct. Anyway. And that's why everything after the pause is an argument.
But before that, it said, we know from Edward Leal, as if you're representing what his testimony was. And in fact, his testimony had nothing to do with blood. It was just basically seeing somebody at the sink in that empty lot.
Well, that's the crux of our argument, is we do not believe that the second phrase of that sentence was a continuation of the assertion in the first phrase of the sentence.
It's a prosody. Mm-hmm.
Pardon?
Prosody?
Prosody, yeah.
Prosody. Prosody. Okay, thank you. That was very, you taught me a new word, Mr. Vincent.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
I looked it up, and I that's the word I came up with.
It's a good word.
It's all the nonverbal aspects of speech, I guess, gesticulations.
So tell us how it flowed with the because.
If you listen to audio, and I know you ordered it. There is a distinct break after the face before because, right? Mr. Lawrence is going to come up and speak about that, and maybe perhaps answer some more specific things with respect to that question. I don't want to speak on his behalf too much. Okay, going back to number six. So Willis's defense team, or his response to the arguments that the person in the videos had blood on them, okay, I think we can safely say that it's uncontested that the person in the bus videos and the video in Anaheim, it was Willis, right? And you can definitely see in those videos that before the incident, he has a white shirt. After the incident, it's soiled. And in general, Mr. Susi referred to it as soiled. But he did argue that it was blood, that it was a reasonable inference that it was blood. So this was Willis's defense team's response. Did the state present any evidence to you in this courtroom that the stains in it on his shirt were blood stains, as they have argued to you? That's a pejorative question. And pejorative questions are by definition questions that nobody expects anyone to answer because the answer is so obvious. Because there was no direct evidence. And Willis's defense team did not believe that Mr. Susie had asserted that there was evidence. They believed that it was argument. And in fact, if you...
Why is that? Because there was no objection? Is that what you're saying?
Because they did not... We believe that they did not perceive that as a statement of fact. They perceived it as an argument.
And you're saying that because there was no objection?
Because there was no objection, and also because
at the sidebar, right?
Right.
When they were the defense was then arguing at the sidebar. They were using the term argument.
Right, and they're using the term argument, and it's at the sidebar. Both the judge made that statement. It was not contested by either Mr. Susie or Willis's defense team. It seems like everybody in the room was on the same page. Everybody in the sidebar was on the same page as to what that statement meant, that it was argument and not a statement, a statement of fact.
You know, you had our opinion. There's probably motions in limine. You had trial evidence, witnesses testify. I mean, the one thing that was pretty clear is a shirt's not going to be brought in a clear evidence bag into the courtroom. And then by extension...
Well, it was suppressed, so...
Right, right. Yeah. But then by extension, there would be no evidence of blood on a shirt that the police think that Willis wore, right? That's sort of the, let's say, the ground rules that both sides are operating on. But then closing argument seems to have changed things where it's then said that the shirt is bloodstained. And I'm just wondering, you know, if the defense knew from the get-go or even as the trial is going on that the prosecution was going to say that the shirt that he's wearing from the bus, you know, walking home, mm-hmm. was bloodstained. I mean, couldn't you, perhaps the defense strategy might have shifted. And they said, hey, you know what? If you're going to say the shirt had bloodstain and you're showing this video to the jury, I want that shirt in now. I want that shirt in now. And let you counter it with maybe he washed it, or maybe it's not the same shirt or whatever, but then there's that issue. But because it was only brought up at closing, does that undercut the right to present a defense?
My argument is that, I mean, and I think it should be clear that if they waive their right to suppress the shirt, they would also have to waive their right to suppress the shoes, okay?
Why is that?
Because it's incomplete evidence, okay? It would be improper for them to take one suppressed item, prayed it before, that helps their case, and yet deliberately hide the piece of evidence that's most damning to their
but
client.
But they would only have done that if you had said, like at closing, that the shirt was bloodstained. I mean, that's an isolated thing, independent of the shirt.
Well,
right? I mean, so I don't understand why it would be an all or nothing.
I think it would have to be. And let me cite you a case.
And it would be the prosecution's injecting the bloodstained shirt. So we'll focus and we'll, all right.
So this,
we didn't know you were going to do that, but we want that in now.
So I think it's all or nothing, and that's my opinion. That's my position at this point. It's all or nothing. They have to have, if he wants to waive his right to suppression, then great. He can bring in his shirt, but we get the chance to bring in the shoes. Okay, and the case I rely on is a case I had a few years ago. It involved a statement rather than evidence, but it was a State v. Brooks. 125 Hawaii 462. And in their case, Judge Pollack was the presiding judge at trial there. And the defendant in that case wanted to, there was a statement, there was a statement by a co-defendant who died, okay? And part of the statement was favorable to the defendant, and the rest wasn't. And they wanted to only bring in that part of the statement that was favorable to the defendant. And Judge Pollack said, no, you can't do that. It's a misrepresentation of the evidence, of the state of the evidence.
Was it due to context of the statement? It seems like a piece of evidence, shirt, shoes, can quite easily be separated.
I think that they it was under the law of completeness, Judge Pollack felt that you could not bring one thing in. You could not bring one suppressed item in. Only that part of the suppressed items that you felt helped you, and not the rest. Okay, so I could not find a case in a case like this where it involved evidence, but that's my position. And if you'd like supplemental briefing on that, I would be happy to try to find other cases.
No, that's okay. Thanks for your explanation. Okay.
So, but anyway, in any case, I think it was clear that all the references to the bloody shirt, okay, were argument. Okay, the jury was fully aware that they rested on reasonable inferences from the evidence. Okay, fortunately in this case, we had excellent circumstantial evidence, overwhelming, we submit. So we don't believe that it affected the outcome of this case.
I just want to point out that Brooks dealt only with, it's a Rule 106 issue relating to writings. And so I don't understand the argument.
It applies to all, I believe it applies to all suppression.
When a writing or recorded, it relied on Rule 106, when a writing or recorded statement.
But it basically relied on the principle that you cannot use the suppression, you can use the suppression tool as a shield, but you can't use it as a sword. And in this case, using the T-shirt as a sword and not a shield.
Well, it seems like it would be a shield to shield against the blood-stained shirt comment.
Yeah. Okay. Furthermore, that shirt meant nothing. Okay, there's lots of white T-shirts in the world, and it could easily, even if it was the T-shirt that was worn on that day, it could have easily been washed multiple times. So it would not have made any real difference in this case to have paraded out the T-shirt that was found when he was arrested.
Mr. Vincent, in the response to the cert application, counsel for the defense raises the issue of the toxicology report related to the complaining witness and suggests that argument made by the deputy prosecuting attorney on that point was improper. What's your response to that? Is it an issue?
Well, I don't think that that's before this court right now. I mean, I raised only one issue in my application for cert, and that was whether or not the ICA gravely erred. Well, three issues, but I mean, they are all related to this issue as to whether or not this statement was misstatement of testimony or an argument. I've addressed the issue as to the prosecutor's comments on the toxicology tests. Okay, the toxicology tests was stipulated in alone. Okay, there was no stipulation as to its accuracy, or there was no stipulation that it might not be a false positive. Okay, there certainly was no stipulation that it meant that MK was under the influence of methamphetamine. Okay, which Willis's defense team asserted in their closing argument. Okay. So I think that and furthermore, the comment that Mr. Susie made about it maybe being a false positive was immediately objected to and struck.
Where did that inference come from that meth makes people aggressive? What was the basis for that?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I think in today's community here in Honolulu, I think people are more, the general public is more is more aware of how people look
but what was when they're under the influence. Of, What was the evidence in the record upon which that inference was?
I think this was a lay. There was appealing to the juror's lay knowledge. Okay, I for example, live in Makiki and work at downtown, and I see somebody under the influence of meth every day. Okay, and frequently they're aggressive. Okay, I could give you anecdotal stories of things I've seen down here. Okay. So I don't think that was
I've
all
seen people
power.
On meth that were passive, no aggression at all.
But I mean, it does, you know.
Was there expert testimony on that?
No.
No, right?
No. It was a lay inference. So
your position is it's not properly before this court, or?
Yes, it's not properly before this court. It was before the IC, and they... I don't know if they addressed it or they declined to rule on that, okay? In addition, as I pointed out in my brief, this case is really not about MK's testimony, okay? MK's identification was not the key point in identifying who MK's attacker was in this case. It was the videos and the reasonable inferences from those videos. So I would argue that, you know, assuming there's error, it would be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Do you have any further questions? I'm gonna step down and let
This time.
Mr. Susie.
We'll hear from Mr. Susie at this point.
Good afternoon, Lauren Susi. I was a trial attorney. We know from Edwin Leal that he washed his hands and face because he had blood on them. When I made that statement, I paused for effect. I moved my body. I panned the jury when I spoke
to
them.
Mr. Susi, I do want you to be careful about in effect testifying. You know, there's a record that we have to review. So we have the transcript and we have the audio.
Correct.
And we can look at those, and we have. But I don't think it's appropriate for you to come in effect, add items to the record based on your own experience of what was in the courtroom, because Mr. Seitz could do the same thing. He could say, no, you weren't, you know, whatever it is. So again, ordinarily in appellate arguments, you're arguing from the record. So please base your arguments on what's in the record.
Okay.
So you can say, if you listen to the tape, you'll see that there was a pause. That's perfectly appropriate argument.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor. What I'd like to point out is what's not before this court, and that is the video of when I made that statement. And I wish that it were before this court. The pause that I made was for effect. The video would show you a more complete statement. The ICA did not have either the audio or the video. And unfortunately, this court, although you do have the audio, do not have the video of my mannerisms when I made that statement. When I made that statement, the defendant counsel, Mr. Seitz and Mr. Liu, with over 50 years of experience between them, did not object. And they did not object because they understood that I was making argument. I was not creating new evidence. This statement has to be taken in the context of what preceded it.
Well, maybe they were just not objecting because they didn't need to, because, hey, that wasn't Willis.
Well, I don't know why they didn't, if that could be. But they did not object.
Because they were arguing, yeah, sure, the bus video, Exhibit 6 and all that, that's all Willis. But Exhibit 4 is not Willis. So, I mean, doesn't even matter, quite frankly.
Well,
I would think you'd say no.
So the context of that statement, because he had blood on him, and, of course, we assert that it was Willis himself. that he had got on top of Malia Kaliki's back when she was sunbathing on the beach, put his left hand around her mouth, pulled her head back, and stabbed her 15 times in the shoulder and neck. When he got up from that position, Taylor Gray, who was a little bit away from where Ms. Kalihiki was, noticed that there was something on his T-shirt. The next time we see him in Exhibit 4, he's running to this sink in his construction site, clearly washing his hands and his face. The inference that I drew from that was because, given that he stabbed her 15 times, it's fair to infer that he probably has blood on his hands, probably has blood on his clothing and his T-shirt, and he needed to wash it quickly and leave the area. Now, when I argued about the T-shirt, I was very well aware of what was suppressed, and I did not want to talk about T-shirts or shoes. But when you look at the surveillance video, you can see clearly that Willis had a clean T-shirt up to the point where he took an office T-shirt in State's Exhibit 4. And then 2 hours later, you see him on Pu'io Street, furtively looking up and down the street. And you can see clearly that he has something on his T-shirt. And so the inference that I made was that it could be blood. And I think that's a fair inference based on the circumstances taken in context.
Mr. Soucy, your time is almost up. Anything you want to highlight to wrap up?
Well, time goes by too quickly, Your Honor. I would say that I had used the word because four different times around the same time period, and that's page 45, line 13, page 48, line 9, 11, page 48, line 15 through 16. And I use the word because to emphasize a break and that what followed it was argument. And that's what I did with the Edward Leal statement. And I must say that when I got the decision by the ICA, I was a bit flummoxed and disconcerted.
Whether you're flummoxed or not is really not relevant for us. Okay. It really isn't.
Okay.
The record is relevant. Argument about the record is relevant.
Okay. I would ask that the state, I would ask that this court affirm the trial conviction because the defendant is guilty. And I thank you for your time, sir.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Soucy. Mr. Seitz, please, your argument.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear. I prepared an argument, but I'm somewhat shocked by what I've heard up to now, and I'm going to basically start over. First of all, I'm shocked to hear them say that we didn't have direct evidence that was taken away from us because it was suppressed, so we had to go in some other direction and rely upon circumstantial evidence. So somehow, I guess, the fact that the evidence was suppressed, and that wasn't even close, enables them to take some other direction and have some greater freedom, which I don't understand. Secondly, they say, well, this was just argument. But argument has to be based on fact and not misconduct. One of the particular concerns we had, and I'm going to quote you from the record, this is what Mr. Soucy said in his closing. Shirt is soiled. So what happened was that after the defendant arrived to the beach with a clean white T-shirt, after he stabbed Malia, he got blood on it, possibly sand, tried to wash it out, and disappeared for 2 hours. Now, by the time he said that, Mr. Soucy knew that a white T-shirt had been seized from the house at the time of the arrest, that it had been tested, and that no blood had been found on that shirt. He knew that. So here he's suggesting that there was a white T-shirt that had blood on it, which was absolutely impermissible in my view. There's no excuse for that. Secondly, he talks about the defendant going to the sink and washing the blood off his hands and his body. Not a single witness identified the person at the sink as Mr. Willis. Not a single witness. We have video of somebody running to the sink and washing himself off in some form, but nobody said that that was Eric Willis.
Well, I mean, is that necessary? And if you look at Exhibit 4, it's... There's the person running to the sink is pretty small. You can understand why Modus, the police officer who knew Willis, I mean, shows his credibility. I mean, I'm not going to say that's Willis if I don't think it's Willis. But, I mean, and I'll ask you the question that I asked the prosecution. If your defense is that's not Willis at the sink, what does it matter with respect to them saying the inference is that he's washing blood after somebody was just stabbed 15 times shortly before the sink?
I don't really have a problem with that, except when you tie it to the white T-shirt, which had already been excluded, but which basically had been tested and didn't have blood on it. So how can you tie that to Willis?
Well, I think what they're suggesting, or what they're actually stating, is that irrespective of the shirt that was actually seized by the police and was tested, that there might have been another explanation as to why there wasn't blood. He could have washed it, whatever. But I want to ask you this, is, you know, the reality is the jury is going to get backstage, as we know, and they're going to play these videos over and over. So they're looking at 4 and 6 over and over again. And it would seem that a juror might be going, there's an inference based on the other evidence that there is washing of blood off of somebody. And then there's an inference that soiled shirt is blood. So why can't the DPA make the same inference in his argument to the jury?
Because he knows in this case there's no evidence to tie that to Eric Willis. He knows that they seized a T-shirt 2 days after when they arrested Willis at his residence, and he knows that that T-shirt was seized because the police believed that it might be the T-shirt involved, and it was tested, and no blood was found.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that that was the shirt that Willis was actually wearing.
I understand. But, you know, the fact is, in this case, all you really have was evidence that showed Willis on the bus going to the area where the stabbing occurred and going home. That's all you have. There was no other evidence.
But at about the same time that everything happened.
Yes, at
about
the same
time. Because in closing, the way the sequence was, they talked about blood. They then narrate with the videos playing and the photos, the round trip, and they had all the timing lined up. So there's an inference that may be Willis. And you have the complaining witness testifying that blood was spewing. Taylor Gray, I think, also testified about blood.
Yep.
And then you have the proximity and sequence that follows a reasonable inference. In fact, when they make the closing, doesn't he say, what could it be? Blood? There's plenty of blood. Sand? It's on the beach. We don't know. I mean, didn't that really put it in the context of argument?
Yes, but the conclusion is we don't know. And how do you conclude and find somebody guilty of attempted murder under circumstances where there was no physical evidence linking that person to the scene? There was nobody other than the witness in this disputed identification who identified him as having been there, where there were witness testimonies describing and characterizing the attacker as somebody much larger and physically different than Eric Willis, where somebody was seen running down the beach after the stabbing, but the police didn't bother to follow that up, where there was an encampment right nearby where there were people who were using drugs and who were involved in criminal activity, and they didn't bother to follow up that as a potential lead. They saw Eric Willis on a bus going to the vicinity, and everything stopped and focused on Eric Willis at that point. When they indicted him, not a single piece of physical evidence was offered. Not a single witness testified.
Yeah, but the issue really is it a reasonable inference to make the argument that that soiled shirt was actually blood?
No, I don't.
Based on the context that it was presented in closing.
Not in this case, no, I don't believe so. Because in fact, it was a dangerous inference based upon the knowledge of the prosecutor that they had seized a T-shirt and no blood was found on it.
What if the shirt was never found, there was never a search, none of that happened, and there was no shirt found? Can the DPA argue the inference in Exhibit 6 is blood?
No, I don't believe so, because I think that's speculation. I think that's dangerous speculation.
But isn't it a reasonable inference from the events that preceded him getting off the bus and walking home?
You
have to actually have evidence on a shirt that was never found that was actually blood to argue it. Is that the position?
My position is that it's pure speculation, and it's within the context where prosecutors started out in jury selection by saying, we're going to give you a little bit of evidence, and just like the TV show, the game show, you fill in the rest. That's not a proper procedure for trying a case, and it certainly doesn't constitute guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. We also know here that the sink was tested, and no evidence relating to Eric Willis or blood of any sort was found there that was offered into evidence in this case. So we have pure speculation. The prosecutor believes that he was guilty and stands up and basically conveys his belief in guilt to the jury in a number of different ways. You can speculate, you can draw this conclusion, whether the evidence actually supports it or not. That was what happened in this trial. Had there been any direct evidence of any sort whatsoever, we wouldn't be here.
The evidence as to the sink, the reference that you just made, that wasn't in the record, though, right, in terms of what the findings
They didn't
were.
Bring anything in the sink, but we basically, early on in the case, we did produce evidence from the police records of what they had tested.
Right. It didn't make it into the evidence in this
trial. It never was presented. Okay. There was no evidence of any sort tying Eric Willis to the scene of the stabbing. None. Although there were lots of opportunities to produce or find that kind of evidence, it never was materialized. And as again, there were descriptions that were contrary to what Eric Willis looked like. There were other leads. The police just dropped everything when they obtained the surveillance from the bus and said, oh, Eric Willis was in the scene. So we're going to build a case against Eric Willis.
Well, but I mean, the sink seems to show an individual wearing quite similar pants and shoes as to Willis from the bus. Isn't that less than speculation?
There is some similarity, but there also was testimony that the person was wearing jeans and not these khakis that Willis was wearing. There were lots of different testimony about what this attacker looked like. And nobody other than Malia, 6 months after the event, was able to identify the person. The police invested massive efforts and time into holding show-ups and lineups, showed photographs on numerous occasions to people. Not a single one of the people was able to identify Eric Willis as having been the attacker. And so, given all of that, the prosecutor basically was taking a case in which he personally believed that Eric Willis was guilty, as he just told you, and he was attempting to convey that belief to the jury. And if you look at his language is the defendant. He's saying, basically putting Eric Willis's name into the testimony of several of these witnesses when they never did name Eric Willis or identify him. They were not able to do that. He took liberties with the evidence, we believe, here, which was just unconscionable. And the consequence was a conviction in a case where there was absolutely no direct evidence of a reliable nature whatsoever. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Mr. Benson.
Any rebuttal? There was a mention that Mata said that he... I think what Mata said with respect to the guy in exhibit number four was that, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, he said that it looks like the person in the other videos. He didn't say that it wasn't Willis. or that he was, he said it looked like the other person in the other videos. And I think, so anyway, that's in the record. So,
Two where he couldn't identify, he couldn't see the facial features. Wasn't that part of the
right.
problem?
Right, but you can see, see the tennis shoes. I mean, there are numerous videos, and they all fit together like a glove, right? I mean, they all the bus drops off right there at the Kahala Avenue, 100 yards from the beach, right? Wilson's defense team concedes that was Willis on the bus, so he's there at 1:26. And then we see this, and then we see another person on a poor video walking down to the beach. Okay. He looks like he's wearing Adidas shoes. He looks very similar walk to Willis and to the person in all the other videos. Okay. Next time you see a person coming from the beach, right where she was stabbed, less than one minute later from when she was stabbed. And he's again wearing khaki trousers, Adidas shoes. He's got frizzy hair. He's got the same mask, and I would submit he's the same gait, demeanor. Okay, okay. We see him next at Pueo and Farmer Street at a house there. Okay, he's got a stain on his. His shirt is definitely soiled, okay? It looks to me like it's brown. It looks to me like it's coagulated blood, okay? Everybody knows what coagulated blood looks like, okay? They've had it. Everybody's bled sometime and seen what it does when it dries out on your clothes, okay? They know what it looks like. And in the Pueyo Street video, he's coming up Farmer Street. He's going up Pueyo Street one way. Changes his mind, commands the other. He's hiding. He's in the driveway, and he's hiding behind the wall. He's hiding behind the wall. He doesn't want people to see him. And then he walks over to the bus stop where the bus catches him coming on the bus less than 5-10 minutes later. He's got a stain on his shirt, okay? And I think it's conceded by Willis's defense team that that's him in that video, okay? And that's him in the video as he's walking to his house, again, with a stain on his shirt. So we believe that Willis received a fair trial. There was overwhelming evidence that Willis was the person who brutally stabbed MK on the beach that day. And there's no reasonable possibility that any possible imperfection in the trial that contributed to Willis's conviction. So we would ask you to reverse the ICA's SDO and affirm Willis's conviction. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you to all of our attorneys for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku iluna, please rise. Ua ho'oku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolokolo ki eke hanohano o ka moku'aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.